Blog Talk Radio.
Testers on Tuesday, March the 14th, and with the good Latin sounds of my friend Carlos Guedes, we open up a show that, this doesn't sound very Latin to me. We're going to be talking about snow blizzards and memories of winter with our friend Frank Burke. We're going to remember snowstorms of the past and talk a little bit about this one going on up in the north, in the northeast. By the way, we may get a call from a friend up in the northeast. He's going to try to get in, at least give us a report from what's happening up there. But we're going to look back at some of these snowstorm memories. I have a post, hopefully will be available tomorrow, where I, in a humorous kind of way, try to enjoy this situation a little bit by asking the question, what did we used to call these things before? Because we used to call this winter. And now we have all kinds of explanations for it: climate change, global warming, temperature changes. Well, when I grew up, they used to call it winter and summer. If it was hot, it was summer, and if it was winter, it was winter. And that's what we're going to check out with our friend Frank Burke. Let me put him on. Frank, how are you?
Well, thank you, Silvio. You've got just too much common sense that I, too, remember when winter was cold and summer was hot.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know. That's kind of they taught us that in schools, didn't they? That you had at least. Well, when I was growing up, there was one season, summer, and then the rest of the seasons were just kind of 1 month, you know. But
right.
But as far as but now it's gotten so complicated. I thought today we would have a little bit of fun and talk seriously as well about some experiences. You know, we've always done politics, stuff like that. So let's kind of break away from that today and enjoy some commentaries of blizzards in the past. I can tell you that it's lovely here. It was 39 in the morning when we woke up. Which is a little bit on the cold side for us. But it's a lovely sunny day. What's it like up in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, it was very nice. We had about 2 inches of snow. We were supposed to get like 4 to 6 on Monday. And it's been very, you know, kind of cold, about 25 degrees. But the sun has been out, and it's been a beautiful day. So,
same here.
Yeah.
I look out the window right now. It's just an absolutely beautiful day.
The
sunshine.
Streets are clear, the sidewalks are clear, yeah, that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, especially up there, you want the sidewalks and the streets to be clear. But you sent me an email which kind of reminded me that I had also seen that article about the blizzard of 1888, and that's kind of
right.
What got me going, because the blizzard of 1888, Frank, was about the same time as this one, middle of March, in the same region, the Northeast. And
yes.
It really shut down that whole region. But when I read that, and two things occurred to me, Frank. Number one, nobody blamed it on anything other than, hey, this is what happens in winter. And number two,
right.
The whole focus of the city leadership was in making sure the streets were clean and making sure people could go to work and so on. Today, half of the politicians, particularly Democrats, are trying to say, we told you so, it's climate change. And I just feel like, you know, guys, grow up. This is what happens in winter, Frank.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, life isn't supposed to be convenient all the time. It doesn't happen that way. And the political thing, the whole climate change nonsense, I am so glad we're moving away from that with Donald Trump, because it's nonsense, and it's just a money-making scheme for these people who want to inflict these carbon taxes and tell us how to live our lives.
That's exactly right. And I could accept, Frank, that we've had climate change for I don't know how long. I mean, the climate has always been changing, because one of the most important things that determines climate change is the sun. And to the last of my knowledge, I don't know anybody who's ever been able to go to the sun and turn it up or down. So, I mean, the sun kind of does it its own way, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
So that has a lot more to do with our climate. But I'm willing to accept some climate change as an argument, but not when it becomes a religion and they want to push it, you know, push it in our face like it's a done deal. No. Then at that point, I simply say, folks, slow down. It's what happens in winter, Frank.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. And I'm totally with you on that point. And when you think back, you know, from the late 1600s until about 1850, you had what was called the Little Ice Age. And winters, especially in northern Europe, were much colder. In fact, I can remember reading on a BBC blog some years ago around Christmas, an English person wrote in, somebody in England, and said, you know, why is it that we always associate Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol with snow when the odds are you get it once every 10 years in London, and it's generally not much? And the answer from the BBC weather was that we were under the Little Ice Age, which kind of abruptly ended around 1850. And at that time, they had ice fairs on the frozen rivers and you know, just a whole different raft of life that they expected that cold, and they got it. So, winters were much more severe years ago.
And what's interesting, speaking of Dickens, in that book, A Christmas Carol, there is more snow in that story than just on Christmas Day. I mean, even if you go back to when he recalls his memories in school.
Yes.
A lot of his memories were about, you know, playing in the snow and all of that, snowballs and that kind of thing. I mean, I think these things happen. And my practical self is to say, okay, these things happen. You're going to have these cycles and climate change or a cooling age or warming age, whatever it is. But I just don't hitch my wagon to it like a religion, which is unfortunately what it has become.
Exactly.
In so many of these circles. Well, let's go back and remember a couple. I'll let you go first. If you could share with us a blizzard or a time when you really experienced one, Frank.
Well, I'll tell you, I've experienced several in my time. I think I'll just quickly touch on the one in 1977. There was a very, very snowy winter, and both Time Magazine and Newsweek, those criterions of journalistic truth, came out with almost identical cover stories called The New Ice Age. Okay, now, unfortunately, the New Ice Age didn't arrive, or fortunately, depending on your point of view. But I think just a couple of things. We have a kind of family tradition, both up at our place in western Wisconsin, which is an old farmhouse. The house was built about 1902. It's an old farm, and we restored it, so it kind of looks like it did at that time. And here in Reidsville, where we have our main residence, we keep a copy of the Ultimate Blizzard Poem. Now, you and I talking said there were no rock and roll songs about blizzards, but I think there are a couple of poems, and the one that we like the most is a rather long one by John Greenleaf Whittier called Snowbound. And Snowbound recounts a blizzard that he remembered as a boy that would have taken place in New England in the 1840s. And after I tell you my story, if we have enough time, maybe I will just read a couple of small sections of that that I think you would enjoy. But my
Frank,
greatest
I was
memory...
What would be a show without one of your poems? So you have to read one.
Yeah, I'm afraid I sound like one of these cranks from the 1930s.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what would a show with Frank be without a poem? So of course you got to read it. I mean, we'll make time for it, Frank.
Okay, but this is a great story, and it's a true one. This took place sometime in the late 1990s. We were restoring the house, and we were up there. It was about this time of year, and we got a very surprise blizzard, actually. It wasn't really predicted. And this is in the hill country of Wisconsin, and it's very rural. In fact, the county that we are in, Vernon County, is more than half Amish. It was more than half Amish at the last census. It's probably now up to three quarters. So we're in this old house, and we've read Snowbound, and we went to bed. And, of course, the wind, the house is kind of situated near a hill, so you get a lot of wind coming out of the west, and being a blizzard, the wind and the snow make a lot of noise. So about 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up, and I heard this knocking. And Peg, my wife, woke up, and I said, could that be somebody? She said, no, it's just probably the door or something knocking on the house. But it was too regular. So I said, well, I've got to check it out. So I grabbed a robe and went down to the kitchen. And, you know, here it is, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I go to the back door. And I opened it, and there's an Amish woman standing there, a woman whom I recognized because she owned a little store and lived about 5 miles away from us. And her name was Rosa Schwartz. And I said, Rosa, what are you doing there? Come on in. What's happening? And she came in. Well, the story is this. Rosa is a midwife. And there's a young lady who was not Amish, who lived near them, whom she was training to be a midwife. So they got a call that a baby was being born, and the woman's husband got into the car, and Rosa and the woman got in the car, and they were driving to the place where the house where this woman was going to give birth. And in the blizzard, the car went off the road. So Rosa walked probably a quarter mile to our house, and which was the nearest house, and knocked on the door. And I said, well, look, let's get this other woman in here and the husband. Well, do you think we can get the car out? I said, well, we can't get the car out now. So they came in, and we put on some coffee and tea and whatever. And I said, we've got to get a hold of the police. We've got to get the state patrol. And they really fought that. They didn't want that, because they thought that the state patrol would demand that there be an ambulance in case anything went wrong. And they were all into this midwifing and natural childbirth. So ultimately, I said, look, we've got to get them anyway, because your car is half off the road. It's snowing like the devil. The battery won't last all night. The lights will be out. Somebody will come down the road and clip it. So we finally ended up being able to call the state patrol. Fortunately, the phone worked. And they came, and everybody left. And by that time, it was dawn, about 6 o'clock. And the snow was still going. They went on their way. I never heard what happened after that. I presume everything did well. But that's what happened in a blizzard in the middle of the night.
Yeah. No, I tell you, the things that happened, because something like that could have happened any other night, but it was complicated by the fact that there was a blizzard going on, and that really limits your ability to not just walk. I mean, it's amazing that this lady was able to walk even a half a mile to get to her home,
absolutely.
Considering how difficult it is. I mean, I remember, I have a quick story, and then we'll take a break, and I'll tell you the second story, and then we'll hear your phone. But I, the stories that I have of blizzards, the first ones that I experienced were in Wisconsin when we first got there. And most of the time, they were like walking to school, where we would, you know, get into a blizzard either walking to school or going back home, you know, from school if they would close early or whatever.
Sure.
And I'll never forget one in March. I'll never forget one in March about this time where we got this reminder from Mother Nature that Mother Nature likes to remind you that she still runs the season. You know, we don't. She does. So we got one about this time, and, you know, between the 15th and the 20th of March, something like that. And all I could remember was walking, saying to myself, man, I have to walk in this. That's the bad news. But the good news is the baseball season starts in 2 weeks. So that was the only in my mind, you know, I was saying, all right, this is a terrible storm. But you know what? The baseball season starts in 2 weeks, and spring is here. So I just, that's what I kept thinking, and that was kind of that's what gave me the energy, if you will, to make it through it. You know, the fact that I could see that green grass and the baseball game 2 weeks 2 weeks down the road.
Yes,
Frank, let me take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll continue our conversations about memories of blizzards and a few other stories of winter with our friend Frank Burke.
This is Carlos Quedes, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
I got to put in a good plug here for my friend Carlos. You know, we play his music on the show, and he's going to be playing at NOLA, I believe, for a few more weeks. So you got to get out there and see him. He is just absolutely fabulous, and what he can do with a harp is unbelievable. I've never seen anybody do more with a harp than my good friend Carlos Quedes. Let's get back to Frank. Frank, I have a quick winter blizzard story very quickly, but it happened in February 1979.
Sure.
We, at the time, I was living in Maryland, and President's Day came around, which was a long weekend, you know, Monday after a weekend. And there was a huge storm. I mean, a huge storm that started Sunday night. So obviously Monday, most government offices, banks, or whatever were closed. So a lot of people, you know, did not drive. So I'm going to guess a significant number of people didn't go to work. So it didn't impact the highways or anything. But then on Tuesday morning, life was normal again, meaning that you had to go back to work. The banks had to open. The schools had to open, you know, just a normal day. But
sure.
The situation was still very bad as far as the highways and getting around. So the governor of Maryland and some of the local authorities, they decided to shut down. It basically told people, don't go to work. We're going to shut down for another day. But something got in the way, and that is that a bank, by federal law, a bank cannot close 3 days in a row. That's kind of a throwback to, I guess, the days of the Great Depression. So they had to get, I think, the Secretary of Treasury. This would have been in the Carter administration. They had to get the Secretary of Treasury to issue a special order so that the banks could actually close that Tuesday. And I remember a great deal of conversation about this, and it became kind of a history lesson for a lot of the young people who don't remember the Great Depression, when banks used to close on their own. And banks cannot do that anymore, Frank. So that's kind of my winter story. Not as exciting as the lady knocking at your door, but still an interesting one, Frank.
Well, that's fascinating. I was totally unaware of that, about those regulations. But, you know, I think that today one of the things that you see, they interview people on the street whenever there's going to be a blizzard, and the media is hyping it up, and it's, well, I put in a lot of food, I put in this, I put in that. Wait a minute. You know, you're going to be able to get out a day and a half after the blizzard. But they have this instinct that goes back. And, of course, the thing that was so terrifying about the blizzard of 1888 was the fact that in those days, people did not have refrigerators. Women went shopping every day. And the stores depended on deliveries on a daily basis. And that blizzard literally cut off the rail lines. It shut down New York for 3 days. So, you know, you didn't have in the cities, if maybe in the country, it would have had a bin with apples in it, or, you know, you would have put canned food. But you didn't have all the canned foods and the preserved foods that we have today. So it became a rather serious event. And I think today you hear people talking about that, well, I've got to get to the store, we've got to get all the stuff because there's going to be a big blizzard, we're going to be locked in. Well, wait a minute, you probably have enough in your pantry or on the shelf in your kitchen to keep you going through two blizzards.
Right, yeah. I mean, normally most people have something, unless you have children or something and you have to have milk or whatever.
Right.
But again, most people with children have probably at least a liter in the refrigerator. I just remember, now that you mentioned that people didn't have refrigerators, in our early days in Wisconsin, I remember one time my mom bought too much meat, and it didn't fit in the refrigerator. She kind of overestimated. Maybe she mm-hmm. found a sale or something and bought a lot of extra beef. And so she left it outside, thinking, well, it's you know, 10 degrees outside, and nothing will happen to it, which it didn't. Nothing happened to it except that it was so frozen
right.
To the point that it took a lot of time to defreeze it because, in the refrigerator it may be, I don't know, 35, 40 degrees, but outside, it, at least in some of those winters, it can drop below zero. And when things are under, you know, when things are below zero, they really freeze. And they freeze, I mean, they turn into stone. And I'll never forget picking up that piece of beef, ground beef, that my mom had left outside. And it was like I was holding on to a stone, Frank. I felt like I had
absolutely.
A rock in my hand. That's how hard it was. And, she brought it in, and, you know, it took a little bit of time to defrost. But again, I think what makes these stories interesting, your story about 88 and my story about, you know, the bank and all of that, is that we're not blaming global warming or climate change. We're simply saying this is what happens and you better be ready for it.
Life
is not fair. Life is not fair. I mean, it doesn't always snow on the day. It doesn't always snow on Sundays, so you don't have to go to work. It can snow on a Wednesday when you have to go to work and life is not fair. Stuff like that would happen. So do you have that poem you want to share with us? We've all grown accustomed to your poetry, so give it away.
Okay, I'm going to read. This is quite a long poem. It's a long narrative poem. And I'm only going to read two places, two small sections. One is the way he sets it up, the way John Greenleaf Whittier remembered it before the snow came. And it goes like this. The poem is called Snowbound. The sun that brief December day rose cheerless over hills of gray and darkly circled gave at noon a sadder light than waning moon. Slow tracing down the thickening sky, its mute and ominous prophecy, a portent seeming less than threat, it sank from sight before it set. A chill no coat, however stout, of homespun stuff could quite shut out. A hard, dull bitterness of cold that checked mid-vein the circling race of lifeblood in the sharpened face, the coming of the snowstorm told. The wind blew east. We heard the roar of ocean on his wintry shore and felt the strong pulse throbbing there, beat with low rhythm, our inland air. So that's kind of what happened just before the storm. Well, I'm going to jump ahead a little, to the next morning. So all night long the storm roared on. The morning broke without a sun. In tiny spheral traced with lines of nature's geometric signs, in starry flake and pellicle, all day the hoary meteor fell. And when the second morning shone, we looked upon a world unknown, of nothing we could call our own. Around the glistening wonder bent the blue walls of the firmament, no cloud above, a universe of sky and snow. The old familiar sights of ours took marvelous shapes. Strange domes and towers rose up where sty or corn crib stood, or garden wall, or belt of wood. A smooth white mound the brush pile showed, a fenceless drift what once was road. The bridle post an old man sat with loose flung coat and high cocked hat. The well curb had a Chinese roof, and even the long sweep high aloof in its slant splendor seemed to tell of Pisa's leaning miracle. There we go.
Well, I think that extremely, I love these poems that you read because, well, aside from the fact that you do such a good job, they're so rich for the imagination. I mean, you can see yourself, you know, following you almost as if you're describing a movie. You know what I mean? It's just like I'm following you when you say these things. But you know, one last story of winter that neither you and I were around back then, but it was a winter that had a huge impact on the people who came in the Mayflower. I mean, the Mayflower landed here, and they either by mistake or not exactly sure that whether they underestimated winter or they just came at the wrong time. But winter played a huge factor in those people surviving here in the United States. And you think of how winter, in a sense, made them stronger people because they had to survive. And when it was all done, you know, they said, thank you for surviving. And so, you know, I think sometimes Mother Nature gives us these, you know, tests, if you will, so that, we learn how to be stronger people. Because whether it's the winter or the summer or whatever, it forces you to organize yourself. If you're a farmer, well, you better take care of the spring. You better take care of the summer because in the winter you cannot plant. And it just organizes people, and I think it creates a certain discipline that I think it's good for us. As problematic as these storms may be, I think it makes us stronger people, Frank.
Oh, it very definitely does. You look at, for instance, the winter of 1777 when Washington and his army were at Valley Forge, and what a cruel, cold winter, an extremely rugged winter that was. And yet they managed to survive it, and they managed to come out of it as a stronger fighting force and one that had been more knitted together.
That's right. You're exactly right. And so these are all lessons of life. These are all parts of life that make us stronger and make us a better people. And that's why when I see people blaming it on climate change or global warming, it's like they're taking the fun out of all of this, because it's
nothing
but...
Well, you know, you're right.
It's winter.
I heard recently a doctor say... I'm sorry.
I was going to say it's winter. I mean, what we're... what we're experiencing is winter. We don't get the same winter every year. I mean, we get somewhat winter, but some years it's warmer, some years it's colder or more snowy than, but that's what makes it exciting, Frank.
Well, it is, and it's what gives the variety to the year and such great imaginative experiences that watching the seasons change. You know, I heard a doctor recently say that one of the reasons he felt that people were getting sick in some cases more frequently is the fact that they were trying to ignore the seasons. That there are times in winter when you're supposed to feel the cold. You know, if you want to bundle yourself up and like a mummy and try and get away from it, that's one thing. But the bottom line is, I don't mean you should go out, you know, in your undershirt. But it's a healthy thing to be able to endure a little more than you thought you could.
Right. No, I agree with you. I think it makes you a stronger person. Makes you a stronger family, and you react to what comes. I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. If you live in a winter climate, you have to react to it, and instead of finding excuses for it, you simply stand up and say, hey, you know, we're going to get a big storm today. We got to take care of ourselves, take care of the family, and that's what you do, rather than, you know, say, well, gee, we got a storm today because of climate change. No, you got a storm today because you're in the middle of winter, and that's what happens in winter. You get snowstorms. Anyway, Frank.
And it's what makes memories.
It's what makes memories. I mean, you're exactly right. This is what makes memories. This is what people pass on from one generation to the other. Frank, I want to thank you so much for joining us in short notice, but I thought this would be enjoyable going back and remembering these great memories of our past. And
this has been a lot of fun.
In New York. Yeah, I wish the people up in New York and in the Northeast and all of that, we wish them a safe recovery from all of this, but I'm sure they're going to be just fine.
Right, definitely. Well, thanks so much, Silvio. God bless, and God bless our audience.
Thank you so much. My good friend, Frank Burke, up in Wisconsin. Always enjoy chatting with Frank and just having a lot of fun with him. No politics today, just a lot of winter stories. That was the whole point of the show. If you're up in the Northeast, folks, take care of yourself. It could be a little scary, but take care of yourself and stay positive, and everything will work out. Goodbye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.